Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Suicide rates continue to rise throughout the country and here in South Dakota. How can we help our neighbors and ourselves as many begin to consider depression and suicide a mental health crisis? I'm joined in SDPB's Sioux Falls studio by SDPB's reporter, Jackie Hendry. Jackie, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Lori.
All right. We talked a little bit about this, how the numbers in South Dakota are the highest in the Midwest. Let's talk exactly about what some of those numbers are.
Right. Well, just recently, within the last week or so, the latest report with most recent data from 2017, we saw 192 suicide deaths in South Dakota, and that actually breaks the record for the number of suicides in a year in the state's history. And then the last time that record was broken was not all that long ago. It was only 2015, and that previous record was 173. Yeah. So things dipped down a little bit. 2016, 2017, skyrocketed about 20 more suicide deaths.
Right. So what are some of the trends?
Well, I spoke to our state epidemiologist, Dr. Josh Clayton, and he tells me 80% of those deaths are men. Suicide is the second leading cause of death for youth and young adults in our state from ages 15 to 24. But the highest rates of suicide are in that 20 to 24 age range. Some people are curious about how methods might change. Dr. Clayton told me that doesn't really change year to year, pretty much across the board, both here and around the country. Around 50% of suicides are firearms related.
And how is this spread across the state geographically?
Yeah. When you look at a county-by-county map with per capita rates with, I think, like the last 9 years of data or so, almost all of West River is in the darkest shade. Hmm. But then there are also still several East River counties that are very high as well. Most of the highest rates that we find in South Dakota, Dr. Clayton tells me, Buffalo County, Corson County, Dewey, Hyde, Oglala Lakota, and Todd counties. Many might recognize that many of these counties are found on reservations. And Dr. Clayton tells me that rates of suicide for Native Americans are about 3 times higher than those for whites in South Dakota.
How are individual communities taking these numbers and what they are seeing in their neighbors, their schools, their homes? How are they responding as communities?
In many cases, it's turning into kind of this grassroots effort. So, you know, behavioral health care more formally is available in places like Sioux Falls, Rapid City, maybe Aberdeen, but elsewhere in the state, it can be really sparse. Yesterday, I spoke with Letoy Lunderman, who's a development manager for the White Buffalo Calf Women's Society out in Rosebud, but she and a group of community members on the Rosebud Reservation, which includes Todd County, which I mentioned earlier, they're really working to deal with that epidemic, and that's kind of outside of their employment. And she explains that resources for mental health care out there are slim to none.
Speaking to the behavioral health professionals at IHS, they're functioning kind of in a crisis mode where they're responding to whatever's occurring in the emergency room or, you know, whatever crisis was presented that day. So finding consistent long-term care is seen to be a challenge for us here.
Jackie, how does that situation impact responses to crisis situations?
In those situations, a lot of times the community members themselves sometimes become those first responders.
Sure.
Lunderman says she and others are oftentimes the ones getting a call from maybe law enforcement who is so many miles away saying, we have a report of this child who is missing, has been reported to be suicidal. And then she and others go out on their own time in their own cars, hoping to find these kids before they do something drastic. And then if those individuals are found in time to be taken to the hospital to be stabilized, then after that, they are often sent to mental health facilities that are hours away, either in Rapid City or Sioux Falls. They stay for maybe a week tops, and then they're discharged right back to the same situation. There's no real long-term, like she said. And another aspect for these grassroots groups like Lunderman works with, it's trying to figure out how to follow up with that care once that person has returned home. And she says everything that they're doing at this point, it's lacking formal suicide prevention specific training. They're kind of learning as they go, but they're doing it because there is such a severe need. I just spoke to her yesterday, and she said within the last week there have been 3 more suicides in their community.
That has to have an impact on them, as when you think about first responders, professional first responders, and some of the things that they deal with, it gets to them, and there are mm-hmm. services that they have access to sort of help with their own resilience as they do their work, but there's no support for those community first responders. They're just doing it because it's the right thing to do.
Right. And that's something Lee Toy Linderman shared with me yesterday. I asked, what are your biggest needs? Is it funding? Is it resources? She says, yes, all that's important. But at this point, what we would really love was just training. Like, how do we deal with this? Because mm-hmm. you can follow your gut to a certain extent. But sometimes there are just things that you don't know right then that you wish you did.
Right. So is it different outside of reservation communities or in more populated areas?
In some ways, but not entirely. I spoke with Stephanie Schweitzer-Dixon, who's the executive director of the Front Porch Coalition, based kind of out in Rapid City. They're a nonprofit, mostly volunteer group who's made up largely of people who themselves have lost loved ones to suicide. And through their loss teams, they respond to the sites of recent suicides, where they then, you know, work with the family members and friends who are left behind. And they serve right now Pennington, Meade, and Lawrence counties. But Schweitzer-Dixon told me there just simply aren't enough resources.
How do they serve families after suicide attempts?
Right. Many times a volunteer on call with the loss team will arrive, perhaps even on the scene, as law enforcement is responding to someone being found. And these are teams that also exist kind of around the Sioux Falls area, loss teams, perhaps in other places in South Dakota. But the idea is that these individuals are contacted by law enforcement. They go to the scene and they help guide the family members who have just discovered that they've lost, like their loved one is gone, their loved one killed themselves. And they help that person deal with the shock that they're going through mm-hmm. and those kind of what now questions. And another thing with the Front Porch Coalition and others, they do have training opportunities, so they're equipped to handle these situations on top of their own personal experience. But they also may point those individuals to outside resources. So Stephanie Schweitzer-Dixon told me they have their own support groups that are specific to suicide.
People will always say that if they go to a general grief support group, or parents will go to a support group and talk to other parents who've lost a child, it is in no way, shape, or form the same kind of loss as if somebody was dying from cancer or in a car accident. And by no way do I mean to minimize that kind of loss. It's just there aren't the same kinds of questions left behind, the same kind of guilt left behind, the same kind of wish I could have, should have, would have left behind.
And Stephanie Schweitzer-Dixon says they found that families and friends who get that, you know, immediate counseling or direction from loss teams, they themselves are much less likely to turn to alcohol or other unhealthy coping mechanisms when they're dealing with this loss. And they themselves are less likely to consider suicide. And she says one of the biggest challenges her organization faces is, A, just having enough volunteers who are able to be on call who have that particular experience. And also funding to cover that training and other costs. And that's not really coming from local or state sources, so they have to rely mainly on fundraising and grants.
All right. What about that grassroots suicide efforts in regards to prevention?
Mm-hmm. Again, with Lee Toy Linderman, she says that in her community there are different work groups working on the different pieces of that puzzle. And in the prevention side, as well as all over the place, she told me that in all of their efforts, they want to be sure to include their spirituality.
Well, a lot of our young people here have a disconnect to our culture, to who we are, due to, you know, assimilation and different things that have happened historically to us as Lakota people. So that can contribute immensely to the feeling of hopelessness if you don't know where you come from, if you don't, you know, have an understanding of that or believe in a higher power.
So one of the other efforts part of the community on Rosebud is working on is that cultural and spiritual education, getting some of that knowledge to young people through the school system. And I should also say kind of across the board, even outside of reservation communities, education is a big part of it, that kind of preventative thing of educating individuals about this is what to look for in your neighbors, this is what to look for in yourself, and understanding different aspects of that as well.
And talk a little more about this role of identity.
Mm-hmm. So with suicide across the board, there are always going to be a wide variety of factors that can play into an attempt, and it's rarely going to be a single issue. I was able to attend the suicide research panel last night put on by USD's Center for Brain and Behavior Research. There were discussions of the role of genetics, how your genetics shape your biology, so how your brain interprets these different hormone levels, and how that can lead to depression or a suicide attempt. External factors play a role too. Science shows that lower socioeconomic status can equate to an accumulation of stress over the course of a lifetime. Isolation is a huge issue. So that can be social or even looking at geographic communities. That kind of isolation can take a toll on a person. But to the question of identity, one of the presenters last night, her name's Ann Dillon Schneider. She's a licensed practitioner here in Sioux Falls. And she spoke about working specifically with Native American populations and also LGBTQ plus populations. And she says with Native Americans in particular, what we're seeing with those especially high suicide rates, she says, is exactly what the system was designed to create. And she points to these historically documented situations like the purposeful slaughter of buffalo or the boarding school systems that were designed to end previous ways of being for Native communities. So when Litoy Lenderman tells me with regard to spirituality and including that, it's not, she says it's not just about a religious perspective, but it's about a worldview and how they carry themselves as Lakota people. Mm. And then that's a whole huge other conversation. There was some talk about the idea of intergenerational trauma last night as well, which also plays into a lot of that. But with regard to identity in Native communities specifically, you could point to a system that was created and the results of that.
And there's a sense that it was, you know, if you wanted to create a map that would cause, or a plan that would cause the situation that you see now, that's the map or that's the plan. Mm-hmm. We're getting that sense a lot in a lot of conversations that we're having. You got that sense too, that there was a sense of intentionality about it, or I shouldn't say intentionality, that's the wrong word, inevitability mm-hmm. about it.
Right. And, there were particular documents that were quoted last night that I don't have off the top of my head, but right. We look at these historical documents with like the boarding school systems and things like that. It's pretty clear it's about disrupting these certain right. community aspects.
All right. There's so much more. I mean, when we talk yeah. about depression and suicide and mental health, it just becomes, a more comprehensive conversation. There's, you know, veterans issues, mm-hmm. And mental health in schools. As school gets ready to start and the kids are getting their parking passes and stuff, you walk into the school and you can't help but think, mm-hmm. you know, how are mental health resources being offered to these kids? So much more to look into.
Yeah, and this is something I'll be following for a while.
All right. SDPB's Jackie Hendry, thank you so much. Take care of yourself today.
Thanks, you too, Lori.